It turns out what's good for you is good for the planet, too.
Diets in the U.S. that are lower in carbon footprint tend to be a bit more healthy.
I'm Kara Holsapple. This week on the Allegheny Front, it's just what you think. A new study takes another look at eating red meat. Plus, fresh water is getting saltier, and we're contributing to it.
Rock salt that you put on your sidewalk isn't going to just disappear. It ends up in our rivers and streams, where there could be ecological consequences.
And we meet a pageant queen who values renewable energy as much as her crown.
Pageantry celebrates everything that I am. It's not just the way that I look. That's what the disconnect, I think, is with a lot of people that don't understand it.
Those and more environmental stories are coming up on the Allegheny Front. Stay with us. Environmental groups sent a letter to U.S. Steel Wednesday, saying they plan to sue the company after a December fire damaged equipment at Clairton Coke Works near Pittsburgh. State Impact Pennsylvania's Amy Sisk has more.
Penn Environment and the Clean Air Council say several U.S. steel facilities are using coke oven gas without sending it through pollution controls in violation of their Clean Air Act permits. The gas normally goes through a desulfurization process at the Clairton plant, but that equipment has not operated since the fire. In high concentrations, sulfur dioxide emissions can be a respiratory irritant. Ashley Diemer is with Penn Environment.
We will not sit idly by and let a chronic polluter run roughshod over our environmental laws and put the health of our residents at risk.
The environmental groups can file a federal lawsuit 60 days after giving notice. They say they would request civil penalties and a court order requiring the company to comply with its permits. U.S. Steel says it's reviewing their letter and that it's committed to cooperating with officials to protect the environment and steel industry jobs. Amy Sisk, State Impact, Pennsylvania.
The EPA says it will begin a process to regulate a number of widely used toxic chemicals that have been contaminating drinking water supplies nationwide. Some of those chemicals are no longer used but remain in the environment. The PFAS chemicals were used in the production of nonstick cookware, stain-resistant clothing, and firefighting foam. They've been linked to cancer and other health problems. Environmentalists and other critics say the EPA is not acting fast enough to protect public health. Mark Kuker is with the Bucksmont Citizens for Cleaner Water.
There's just no reason why this couldn't have been done by now, or more concrete steps taken to make it be done.
Once EPA decides on a safe level, it could take several years to complete the regulatory process. And in the Ohio River, the Ohio Valley Sanitation Commission, or ORSANCO, which is an 8-state compact, decided on Thursday against a move to eliminate its water pollution standards. Instead, the agency will consider alternative proposals and get more public comment. The original proposal to eliminate the standards got more than 5,000 comments, most of them against the move. Freshwater mussels once thrived in rivers, streams, and lakes across Pennsylvania, but most of those have disappeared. Now the state will invest in a multi-million dollar project to restore those mussel beds. State Impact Pennsylvania's Susan Phillips reports the effort is aimed at cleaning up the waterways.
Humans don't eat freshwater mussels. The shellfish have too many parasites and toxins. But those mussels can help clean up muddy water when they eat microscopic particles like clay, silt, and algae. The algae is food, but the clay and the silt binds with mucus in the mussel, and that gets excreted, where it settles to the bottom. Daniel Krieger is the science director for the Partnership for the Delaware Estuary. Krieger says mussels are natural water filters.
They're like big conveyor belts for material moving from the water column where it's a pollutant to either transforming it so it's not as polluting or locking it away.
Krieger says 95% of the regional streams she surveyed no longer have any mussel beds. The Pennsylvania Infrastructure Investment Authority, or PennVest, gave Krieger's group about $8 million to build a mussel hatchery in southwest Philadelphia. The adult mussel colonies will be placed in both the Delaware and Susquehanna watersheds. Susan Phillips, State Impact, Pennsylvania.
Thank you. U.S. Senate overwhelmingly voted to reinstate a popular program that uses revenue generated by offshore oil and gas drilling to protect public lands. In Pennsylvania, the fund has provided more than $315 million to projects like expansions of state game lands, access to streams for fishermen, and rails to trails. As Brittany Patterson reports, West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin played a key role in permanently reauthorizing the Land and Water Conservation Fund.
The Land and Water Conservation Fund was created more than 50 years ago to protect, preserve, and acquire public lands and waters and make them available for public recreation. But the fund expired last fall. Since then, federal lawmakers have struggled to reauthorize it. In a bipartisan vote this week, the Senate passed a sweeping public lands package. In addition to permanently reauthorizing this land and water fund, the bill places more than 1 million new acres of wilderness under protection. That includes the Appalachian Forest Heritage Area in Randolph County. As ranking member of the Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee, Manchin helped get the bill passed. He said he will work to ensure permanent funding for the program next. The House is expected to take up the legislation soon without major changes. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Brittany Patterson.
It takes more carbon to produce red meat than it does fruits and veggies.
But there's also the consideration of more vegan and vegetarian diets being healthier and decreasing in healthcare carbon emitted. I mean, our healthcare system uses immense amounts of energy.
Later on the Allegheny Front, is what's on your plate better for the climate and you? Stay tuned to find out. Only a fraction of the world's water is freshwater. In the U.S., it's getting saltier. That's according to a study we highlighted last year. It was published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences and pulled data from 232 U.S. Geological Survey monitoring sites across the country. The overall trend is that freshwater is increasing in salinity and is more alkaline, especially in the East and Midwest. That means the majority of U.S. waters are saltier and have a higher pH. Study authors called it the freshwater salinization syndrome. Ryan Utes is an assistant professor of water resources at Chatham University and one of the study authors.
You can almost think of streams and rivers as watershed tea.
Utes says agricultural lime used on farm fields eventually dissolves into the water that drains into nearby streams and rivers. And he says we're still seeing the effects of acid rain from the 70s and 80s, which caused minerals to leach out of rocks and soil, changing the chemical composition of water to be more alkaline. Climate change could also be a contributing factor because warmer water can speed up the dissolution of chemical compounds. And this time of year, there is another obvious contributor of salinity.
Rock salt that you put on your sidewalk isn't going to just disappear and vanish into the atmosphere. It ends up in our rivers and streams where there could be ecological consequences.
What is the impact of this syndrome?
There's likely to be a mix of positive and negative impacts from this trend, with more dissolved chemical compounds that are related to alkalization in the water. These compounds can end up going from being in solution and dissolved to becoming a solid again. That's the process of liming in pipes. Another word for it is scaling. With greater levels of these compounds in our water, the likelihood that these chemical compounds will become solid in our municipal pipes, our industrial pipes, is elevated along with it. So we may end up with a lot more of a challenge in maintaining our infrastructure as a result. Another application where this is going to be of primary importance is those power plants and industrial entities that are using water as a cooling substance. The more stuff that is dissolved in the water from the rivers, the harder it is for that water to be released as steam. You need a higher temperature, or you need to remove those chemical compounds before you use it for a cooling purpose. Increased levels of salinity in the water also have been shown to increase rates of hypertension in humans, and that can be a problem, obviously. On the flip side, we're a little unsure at this stage how this is going to affect aquatic organisms. Stream ecosystems are probably the most physically dynamic ecosystems on Earth because if you think about it, they endure floods and droughts and may do so even within the same year. So organisms are very adapted to dynamic conditions, including chemical conditions. Some organisms may really benefit from higher levels of alkalinity, like mussels and clams, who build shells out of calcium carbonate. With more calcium and more carbonate in the water, they're going to be more likely to be able to make their shells. Marine waters, so the ocean, is of course becoming more acidic as a result of increased levels of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. In the coastal and estuarine areas where rivers are meeting and colliding with marine waters like the Chesapeake Bay, if rivers that feed into the Chesapeake and the Delaware are becoming more alkaline, that might buffer the effects of the increasing acidity that we're seeing in marine waters.
And how is it manifesting in our region? Can you say a little bit about how what might be happening here?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's happening in Pennsylvania as well. We are seeing rivers like the Allegheny and Ohio becoming more saline and more alkaline. Particularly in our region, if you move east of Pittsburgh towards the higher elevation watersheds, and especially those with limestone in their watersheds, so another word for that is karst, that's where the streams and rivers are really increasing most rapidly. This could be because wherever there is limestone in the watershed, that was really hit hard by the acidic precipitation of the 70s and 80s and early 90s. And so the chemical compounds we're detecting now in greater concentrations probably stems from dissolved limestone that was hit by that extra acidic precipitation.
It's kind of ironic that acid rain caused streams to become more alkaline.
It is, isn't it? It's a fascinating story, and it just goes to show how surprising science can be sometimes, because it is somewhat counterintuitive. Even in the Southeast, where we don't have a lot of road salt application going on, we're still seeing rising levels of salinization and alkalization. Down in the Southeast, we think it may simply be due to more chemical weathering of bedrock and soils due to the acid precipitation problem that we just talked about a second ago, and also potentially due to climate change. The warmer the temperatures, the faster dissolution rates oftentimes occur. And finally, when we build cities in watersheds, we put in lots of concrete. Well, concrete slowly dissolves over time. It's going to take decades or centuries, but because rainwater is naturally acidic, it's about 5.6, that rainwater will very, very slowly dissolve the concrete, and that ends up getting expressed in our nation's waters as well.
Is your paper sort of asking people to think about how to manage some of these inputs, or what kind of recommendations could come from this type of study?
Well, as far as the on-the-ground consequences and what we would recommend people to do afterwards, I think we're at such an early stage of the research that we wouldn't be able to make solid recommendations. So, of course, one thing I could say is that we shouldn't apply so much road salts to our roads during this time of year. That's not going to turn off because people want roads that are not covered in ice, and that's totally understandable. But perhaps this research might cause us to think about how much salt we apply to our roads and sidewalks. What we hope this does is cause other watershed scientists to take a look at the problem, to elucidate what's happening, what are the major drivers of it, and what are the consequences of it, in order to make recommendations that are more concrete and specific in the future.
Well, thank you so much for talking with me.
Cool. Thank you so much for having me in. I'm glad you gave me a chance to talk about my research, and pay attention to your rivers and streams, everybody.
Ryan Utes is an assistant professor of water resources at Chatham University. There's more at AlleghenyFront.org. This is the Allegheny Front. I'm Carol Holsapel.
We'll be right back.
just heard about the risks of using rock salt on sidewalks and roadways this time of year because of how it impacts rivers. Alternatives have some people concerned as well. Lawmakers in Ohio are considering reintroducing a bill that would loosen regulations on a de-icer that's made with wastewater from conventional gas wells. The Allegheny Front's Julie Grant reports that there's some evidence the product has radioactive properties that could harm human health and the environment.
Ohio-based Nature Zone Source has been making the de-icer Aqua Salina for years. It's been sold to retailers, schools, and local governments because it works well when it gets really cold outside, like below 10 degrees.
I've gotten reports from cities that say it's actually saved them a ton of money.
That's Ohio State Senator Matt Dolan.
It used to take 4 or 5 hours of manpower to clean the sidewalks in cities. Now it takes significantly less.
The company recycles brine water from conventional oil and gas wells, not fracked wells, and sells it as a de-icer. In Pennsylvania, the Department of Transportation says it does not currently use Aqua Salina or other brine from drilling operations on the roads. But the Ohio Department of Transportation told Cleveland.com it used 1 million gallons of Aqua Salina last winter. Dolan says it does more than just melt ice. It also uses a waste product that's in abundance.
Natural brine water, which is in and of itself a problem. And if we can make it more safe, more applicable, create jobs in the meantime, use technology and innovation, we should do that.
Dolan is considering reintroducing a bill he sponsored last year that never got a vote in the Ohio Senate. It would loosen regulations on Aqua Salina. But ever since an environmental group got a copy of an unreleased report by the Ohio Department of Natural Resources last summer, concerns have been growing about the product. ODNR tested 14 samples of Aqua Salina and found levels of radioactivity that exceeded state limits for drinking water and the environment.
Do you really need to have a product that might contain that kind of threat to your health?
Trish Demeter is with the Ohio Environmental Council. She's concerned that if state legislation reducing regulations on Aqua Salina is introduced again this session as expected, more people will be spraying it onto sidewalks, driveways, and roads.
There could be a product out there on the shelves available to any Ohioan to use that could potentially have elevated levels of heavy metals and radioactive material.
Demeter says people use de-icers repeatedly each winter, so the radiation and heavy metals found in Aqua Salina could build up in the environment, elevating health concerns like cancer. But Senator Dolan and other lawmakers question the validity of the ODNR report. He says he'll review a variety of studies about Aqua Salina before deciding whether to reintroduce his bill. For the Allegheny Front, I'm Julie Grant.
Support for the Allegheny Front comes from the Center for Environmental Research and Education at Duquesne University, celebrating over 25 years of preparing environmental professionals at both the undergraduate and graduate levels. The center provides multidisciplinary education for careers in environmental science and management with opportunities for research and internships. Featured programs include the Environmental Science and Management Master's Degree and Professional Certificate programs. Applications for the summer and fall semesters are now being accepted. More information on the Center for Environmental Research and Education can be found at duq.edu/ESM.
A lot of people assume a healthy diet is also good for the environment. Lester Graham with Michigan Radio finds that a recently published study lends some credence to that conventional wisdom.
Researchers at the University of Michigan and Tulane University looked at a large sample of Americans and what they said they ate. Researchers then looked at the nutritional value of that food. Finally, they looked at how much those foods emit greenhouse gases as they were produced on the farm. Martin Heller with the University of Michigan is one of the co-authors of that study released in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. We talked to him by Skype.
What we found is that indeed there is a correlation that diets in the U.S. that are lower in carbon footprint tend to be a bit more healthy, tend to have higher dietary quality than the diets that have a high carbon footprint.
Diets high in red meat, dairy, and solid fats had the largest carbon footprints. That's in part because of the digestive system of animals such as cattle.
The biology that allows them to eat grass also produces methane as a byproduct, which is a powerful greenhouse gas emission, 25 times that of carbon dioxide. and is what really hits beef and other ruminant animals hard in the carbon footprint standpoint.
People concerned about their impacts on climate change have long felt the food they choose has a connection to climate change. Joel Panazzo co-owns the Lunchroom Diner and Canteen and the Detroit Street Filling Station. Both are vegan restaurants. They get some of their customers from the nearby Ann Arbor Farmers Market.
When they're holding their giant bag of groceries and they're walking in here, I think that's when they're connecting the two. Like, I just bought this from the farmer that has the farm 20 miles down the road. And then I think that's the moment when they ask, where are you getting your food?
The researchers looked at the carbon footprint of the products on the farm. But Panazzo says people also want to know whether the food they eat is being trucked across the country.
Folks are considering like all the resources that have to go into the food. And when you consider meat products and other dairy products, you can start to see the amount of all of the traveling and trucking of our agricultural items, all that goes into producing a meat or a dairy product.
We asked if we could meet with a couple of the lunchroom's regulars. Drew Johnson says he's not vegan or vegetarian, but he's added more plant-based food to his diet.
I definitely have this like dawning awareness of different ways that you can eat ethically.
Explain that. What do you mean, eat ethically?
Just thinking about the environmental impacts of meat as I'm starting to think more about climate change and trying to figure out how I act as an individual knowing these things.
A couple of tables away, Meg Schwinski was sitting with a large salad.
Looks good. What is that?
This is the Taco Bouted salad.
As I explained the study's correlation between healthier foods and low carbon footprint, she nodded. She studies and works in healthcare.
I mean, we think a lot about the upstream effects of how the food is produced and how much carbon is emitted getting onto our plate, but there's also the consideration of more vegan and vegetarian diets being healthier and decreasing in healthcare carbon emitted. I mean, our healthcare system uses immense amounts of energy.
Now, there are a couple of caveats the study notes. Some of the low-emission foods are not all that healthy, such as added sugars and refined grains. And while plant-based diets are considered more healthy, they can be lower in some nutrients, such as iron and calcium. Diets are complex, and the researchers stress the findings are nuanced. The one thing that was clear to Martin Heller and his colleagues:
in general, we're not eating very healthily here in the U.S. There certainly are opportunities for us to both improve the nutritional health of our diet along with reducing the environmental impact associated with providing that diet.
A companion study to this one found 20% of Americans account for almost half of the diet-related greenhouse gas emissions. I'm Lester Graham.
People come at environmental problems in various ways. Some get out into the field to protect dwindling wildlife habitat, while others take on polluting industries in court. There's no one way to be an environmentalist. I recently met someone who wears big, sparkly earrings, competes in pageants, and shares the spotlight with environmental issues. Rachel Rakovan is combing through racks of more than 1,000 dresses.
So let me know how that one works out for you, and I'll look around.
She's helping someone find the right fit for an award ceremony. She rents out gowns here at this shop in a Pittsburgh suburb. Some are embellished with rhinestones, and others are chiffon.
I wore a lot of these in different competitions that I won.
Rakovan is the reigning Miss Allegheny County, Pennsylvania for America. It's a new division in the Miss America system that allows unmarried women with children to compete, along with widows and women who are divorced. Rakovan has 2 young daughters.
This green romper has a huge cape. Whenever you walk, you can stretch your arms out and then it flows behind you. Awesome, awesome outfit.
One of the first things Rakovan will tell you about the gowns is that customers have the choice to donate a portion of the rental cost to an organization that provides clean water in West Africa.
My platform is clean water access and renewable energy.
Those are the issues she'll talk up to judges at competitions.
It's not necessarily one that is common because it can be considered as controversial.
Rakovan has been outspoken about the potential air and water pollution from the ethane cracker being built in Beaver County. She grew up in Portsmouth, Ohio, downriver from a uranium enrichment facility.
Many of my friends and family members, they passed away from a variety of different types of cancers.
Those early experiences led Rakovan to study environmental science and health. She's been a biology professor and now works full-time as an energy consultant. But her love of fashion and pageantry has been a constant. She sees no reason her passions can't coexist.
Pageantry celebrates everything that I am. It's not just the way that I look. That's what the disconnect, I think, is with a lot of people that don't understand it.
Rakovan takes her platform wherever she goes.
Beautiful, beautiful. That is Miss Allegheny County, Pennsylvania for America 2019, Rachel Rakovan.
Like a benefit for the American Heart Association, where she models loungewear.
An energy consultant for suppliers, solar LED conversions, microturbines, and cogeneration systems. Another strong, powerful woman. Yeah.
I'm just here to support it, to have fun. And hopefully, you know, somebody can also hear my message in my platform as well. Maybe it'll help them to make some changes in their lives or in their patterns of thinking or in their businesses.
And it's the environment that takes center stage at PCTV, the local public access television station, where Rakovan hosts a monthly show.
Hi, I'm Rachel Rakovan. Welcome to Eco Action.
Carl Cimini is her producer.
Rachel brings a real sort of different dynamic to her show. She does her beauty pageant thing, and she's kind of glamorous, so that's great to be on air if you're selling Toyotas. But it doesn't hurt if you're selling environmental care. So it's kind of, I think it works.
But Cimini doesn't want her to wear her Miss Allegheny sash on air, even though Rakovan wears it around town to community meetings and environmental conferences. He thinks it could be a distraction from what she has to say. Rakovan admits some people have preconceived notions about the intelligence of pageant queens.
Oh, your guest is here.
Yes.
Hi, Matt. How are you?
Nice to meet you.
Yeah, this is Carl, the producer.
Matt Mihalik from the nonprofit Breathe Project is Rakovan's most recent guest. He says Rakovan's interest in fashion might just be an opportunity.
I view that as a strength. Trying to cross those past perceptions is how ideas make their way to a broader audience.
Amanda Beagle is a former Miss Ohio who coaches pageant contestants. She says environmental issues have become a little more common as pageant platforms over the last decade. Last year at the Miss America pageant, Miss Alabama's platform was reducing trash. Miss Michigan used some of her time on stage to bring attention to the Flint water crisis. But Beagle says the judges are looking for more than just a particular cause.
I think what they're looking for is authenticity. So did this person just like choose a platform because they had to have one? Or is this something that they've really been working and sort of living every single day?
Rachel Rakovan is certainly doing that. She was recently elected as a delegate to the state Green Party. And I ask her what that means to her.
Nobody asked me that before. You know, I spent my whole life working towards this moment, you know. I know it's my life purpose, so.
Then, like the pageant queen she is, she pulls herself together.
I hope they don't ask that question in the competition, because like, you can't get all blubbery like that.
Rakovan will get another chance to promote her environmental platform soon. The Miss Pennsylvania for America competition is April 6th. Thanks for joining us on the Allegheny Front. You can always find us on Facebook and Twitter at Allegheny Front. Kathy Naur is the executive producer of our show. I'm Carol Holsoffel.
Support for the Allegheny Front comes from the Heinz Endowments, the Pittsburgh Foundation, and the Park Foundation. The Richard King Mellon Foundation supports our coverage of conservation.